Broadcasting from a device built by a teenage genius using leftover parts from an Erector set. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
And we are in the Echo Chamber, and we're talking about the Star Wars teaser. Greetings, everyone. Jason Hunt here, along with several of the Island of Misfit Toys are here. So we're gonna jump in and analyze and cuss and discuss the 88 seconds that we got from Lucasfilm. Jason Hunt here, along with let's go through all of our list here. Jen Wise is here.
Hello.
Angie Fiedler Sutton calling in from L.A.
Where it's a nice cool 60 degrees for me.
That hurts. Cammie Settle is also here. And Dan Handley and Tim Harvey. How are you, everyone?
Hello.
It's good to have the Echo Chamber back. And this is a good way to bring it back with analysis of Star Wars. How many of us thought that we would ever be at this point again where we would get on the big screen the real... I don't want to say the real Star Wars for real. It's one thing to see fan fiction and the stuff online and people, you know, make their own stuff, but it's quite another thing to see an official. This is going to be the next Star Wars movie. It's very exciting times for fans, I'm sure. So,
and it's not a re-release either.
No, and it's not. Yeah. And it's not in 3D. It's not converted to 3D. That's the other thing. So what it. I guess, where do we start with this? I mean, you've got so much history behind, you know, 30 years between this and Return of the Jedi, which is where this is all picking up. And now we've got this brand new continuity, and all the expanded universe is gone, sort of. And, you know, Disney is now a player, and George Lucas is out, and J.J. Abrams is in, and everybody is just sitting there going, what's going to happen? There was so much trepidation and excitement and this back-and-forth war of emotions, this conflict that was going on with fans saying, what's going to happen next? And this teaser is the first real good clue as to what we can expect. So what is everybody expecting? You good, bad, you're still kind of on the fence, or what?
I'm on the fence on it. I think it looks good. The directing style is a little bit different on it, but there's so much that reminds me of Star Wars. Looks like it is a step forward, but you know, it's one of those things. I was excited about the original, well, not the original, but the prequel trilogy. When I first saw that episode one trailer, I was so excited. It was a good movie, but it didn't hold up to the original. So just an 88-second trailer isn't really going to sway me. It just gets me hyped to see it. That's about it.
You know, I think, and maybe this is coming from a standpoint of somebody who was, you know, the first Star Wars movies I saw in theaters were the prequels. And I grew up with the original Star Wars trilogy on VHS every year. It was a tradition for my family. But I think that it's really not possible to see if it stands up to the originals or not, because when you think about it, there's so much, first of all, so much difference in technology with what they had then to work with and what we have now. There's heightened expectations on the behalf of the viewers, and I think that to try and hold it against what legitimately is both a classic and a staple is probably going to just set yourself up for disappointment. But I'm a huge J.J. Abrams supporter. He actually got me to enjoy Star Trek with his adaptations, which I never really got into Star Trek before. So I think that while we can't really compare it to the originals, you know, apples to apples, I think it's going to be a very exciting thing to see what he can do with it.
I think part of the reason that the prequel trilogies didn't do as well is because there was so much anticipation. It had been so long since we had seen Star Wars. And so I'm kind of holding back myself because I don't want to repeat that error.
But there was a lot more than just that. There was certain elements with the with that trilogy itself that kept it from holding up to the original.
Well, right, I think,
part of the reason is that, you know, everybody was expecting basically a retread.
Well, and I think too, the one thing that I keep going back to, there was a special that was done and is still online. You can find it in various different places, called From Star Wars to Jedi. And it was an examination of the creation of that original trilogy. And in one spot, there's an interview with George Lucas, and he's talking about the fact that the special effects should serve the story. And when the special effects become more important than the story, then you might as well just, you know, pack up your bags and go home. And I think a lot of the criticism of the prequel trilogy stems from the fact that there was so much emphasis placed on the CG and the digital and the look at what we can do with the effects that the story suffered. And Tim, this is something that, you know, that Tim and I have talked about on H2O a number of times. Story, 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 story. If, yeah, and I'll be the first to admit, I'm not a big fan of J.J. Trek and what he did there, but given that he has readily admitted that he's more of a Star Wars fan, and given that Kathleen Kennedy is in charge and riding herd over all of that, I'm cautiously optimistic just from what I've seen. But also, too, I think, you know, Jennifer's right. You can't compare, you know, the technologies, but I think the more appropriate comparison is going to be in the tone, whether they get the spirit of the original trilogies in this new film, because the prequel trilogies, I don't think, did that.
No, I agree. They did not.
Also, in the prequel trilogies, well, to compare the two, the original trilogies, the characterizations were really good. They were, you know, lively characters, had sense of humor, you know, bantered around. Whereas when you got to the prequel trilogies, everybody had a collective stick up their hindquarters. Now, a lot of people talk about how horrible Jar Jar Binks was, but actually, Jar Jar was not as really that bad of a character. He was just a little overplayed, and he completely clashed with everybody else being so serious.
Yeah, he was the only one with a personality.
Well, the thing is, if they had toned him down just a little and everybody else had the personality of the original ones, we'd probably be talking about, you know, how great a character Jar Jar was. But because there was that clash, there was that difference, there was that, you know, it just didn't work. And now everybody can say, well, Jar Jar Binks is the reason why it sucked. It was a bit beyond that.
Okay, well, so I'm going to just... I think that that's a very kind and generous application of reason to a terribly, terribly, poorly written character. And I think that ultimately it's going to happen, because it is going to come down to story. The thing that really excites me about this trailer is that the visual texture feels right. Mm-hmm. And if, especially for those of us who are old enough to remember when the films were new, the original trilogy, there was a visual texture to them, and part of it was the time. It was the 70s when the first film came out. There was, you know, it was a low budget movie, really. There was a visual aesthetic that this trailer has, which very much evokes that original feel. And the prequel trilogy didn't have that, and a lot of it was because it was all CG. And a lot of it was, you know, that, and you can't ignore that one of the things that makes Star Wars Star Wars is the visual feel of it. There's a lived-in quality that wasn't there in a lot of science fiction films. Everything was shiny and pretty and glossy and clean, and Star Wars was gritty and grimy, and things looked old. This has that sense that things are not, you know, fresh out of the box. They've been used for a while. I mean, we have a stormtrooper costume, you know, uniform in this, and it looks broken. It's great.
Yeah, well, and that's something that a lot of people have noticed at the very beginning is when John Boyega pops up, and in that first shot, first of all, everybody is totally convinced that we're starting out on Tatooine. John Boyega pops up, and he's in a Stormtrooper uniform, and it's beat up, and it's dirty, and it's scratched, and you're right, it's that abused, used look that the prequels didn't have, but also the fact that we're getting something that's not gussied up right at the beginning. We're establishing that there's something off. And I don't know if anybody heard it or not, and this has been pointed out in a couple of different places, but as the camera moves and Boyega's character turns his back to the camera, we see the outline and the stuff on the back that says this is clearly a Stormtrooper outfit. Mm-hmm. You also hear in the soundtrack the sound effect of an Imperial probe droid. And if you hear that, and it's the same one, from Empire Strikes Back. It is not the probe droids that were used in the prequel. It's the Empire Strikes Back probe droid. And we hear that, and people are speculating that maybe this is tied into the rumor that Boyega is a deserter, and that perhaps now he's on the run, and we're hearing the probe droids that are going to be looking for him under the direction of his boss, his commanding officer, who's going to be played by Gwendolyn Christie. So that's the start. We start the trailer with a danger, with a circumstance where somebody is at risk. And I think that's a good place to start, because it automatically throws some adrenaline into it and gets us just running right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, granted, I don't want to jump too far ahead into another part, but talking about him being in the Stormtrooper outfit, there was also the theory that he was actually disguising himself as a Stormtrooper, because we pretty much get the feeling now that, you know, they're not all clones of Jango Fett at this point.
Yeah,
right.
But there was... It, again, jumping a little ahead with the line of Stormtroopers in the that vessel, whatever, getting ready to jump out. Mm-hmm. One of the Stormtroopers was shorter than the others.
It's a little
all
short
the others
to be
were the same height. And so I was kind of speculating, well, maybe that was him, and right. He's hiding amongst the others.
Well, and I, from everything that I've seen so far, and granted, this is all rumors and speculation at this point, but everything that I've seen so far has Boyega actually playing a Stormtrooper. And we know by the time we get to the original trilogy, you know, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, they were using conscripts. They were using people, you know, recruits, and not just clones by the time we're in that time frame, at least according to, you know, outside material and references and whatnot. So it's possible that Boyega's character could be a conscript, could be that he was drafted to be a Stormtrooper and doesn't really want to be a Stormtrooper, and now he finds an opportunity to jump ship, and that's part, maybe part of the setup going into this first film. And of course, Daisy Ridley's character plays a role in that as far as what we've heard. And how much does she look like Padme in that one shot? When she jumps on the speeder.
Quite a lot, yeah. I realized that too when I first watched it.
Well, and I saw it with my son, and we looked at it, and we watched it a couple of other times, and he looked at me and said, is she playing Padme? I was like, no, she's not playing Padme. But the resemblance is remarkable. And it's been noted that the goggles that she's wearing are crafted from a Stormtrooper helmet. So that's a nice touch that, you know, it plays up the scavenger aspect of her character, which we've heard is part of her relationship to Max von Sydow's character, who's going to be apparently playing a cyborg running the junkyard. So what do you think of the speeder bike and that environment there? We're clearly on Tatooine, I think.
Well, that's what we're meant to think. Hopefully we are, because there's been a couple of different places that have been popping up lately where people have talked about the annoying tendency in science fiction for planets to all be one thing. So if we're going to have a desert planet like Tatooine, let's just stay there. And have it be a desert planet as opposed to, oh, look, it's another desert planet. It's a little awkward that... that pod racer speeder thing she's on. It doesn't look like it'd be very easy to get on.
Well, I'd read at one point somewhere that it's possibly serves as a tug, maybe. So maybe it's an over-engined transport device, not necessarily used for just running around and zipping down to Tashi Station to pick up power converters, but instead dragging massive, you know, machinery behind it. And speaking of which, we see in that shot with the Robo Ball, with the R2 ball, we see some what looks to be old pod racer engines in the background. And I saw an interesting comment, somebody speculating, well, is this a subtle jab? Is JJ saying that the pod racing and stuff from the prequels is symbolic of it being junked? Have we junked the prequels with that shot?
We are way, way, way too early to be reading into some of the things that people are reading into this stuff. You know, I mean, we have 80 seconds and that goes by so quick. I mean, it's just, I'm all for the speculation. It's lots of fun, but I don't know that necessarily that it would be a, you know, somehow I just don't see that Kathleen Kennedy is going to let anybody go, yeah, we're going to poke the guy who created the entire series and make fun of something he did in the films that he directed recently. That might seem a little uncool. I don't know.
Maybe.
A little disrespectful to the guy who created Star Wars.
But I think also too, because we see this nowadays, and I don't know if I'm, maybe it came as early as, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer with the Bronzers, that online community where the fans actually get to interact with the creators of a show, and we see, well, even as far back as the original Star Trek, where you have the letter writing campaigns. We know, especially in genre, that fan communities have a very loud voice at times, and we know that the creators are a little bit more sensitive to that group, maybe more than other in other genre work. So I'm wondering if at some point in all of this, there's at least going to be an acknowledgement of the fan ire, not necessarily a breaking the fourth wall wink and say, hey, yeah, we know what we did there, but at least something that some sort of an act, a mea culpa or an act of redemption at some point that says, yeah, okay, this is not the prequels. This is the original trilogy that we're going for in tone. I think. Do you think we're going to get that moment?
I don't think we are. I think that I think it's going to be much more likely that they are just going to take what few things worked out of the prequel trilogy, use that, and then just move on. I mean, because really, I don't see the benefit. Yeah, it might be a little bit of fan service, but I don't know if that necessarily gains this film or this apparent return to what we want from Star Wars. I don't think it's going to gain it. I think gain anything to it. Now, it. You know, they certainly could do something like that, but I think that would just be a little, I don't know. It seems a touch petty to me, and quite frankly, I don't know that would be necessarily a good place for any series to start by, especially if it's a smaller picture, you know. Prime example. On Her Majesty's Secret Service. You know, he's got the throwaway line about this never happened to the other guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That that was something that was, you know, but there's a tongue-in-cheek aspect to the James Bond movies that sort of thing works.
Oh, yeah, it's just Star style.
Wars, mm-hmm. Yeah, Star Wars, I just don't see it. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not saying it couldn't happen because we've seen 80 seconds.
right, well, but from the 80 well, seconds that we did see, it looks like they're giving this a pretty, I don't know, a good attempt at continuing the original series. You know, the style, the look and feel, the like Tim said, the grittiness, everything is there, and I think it looks like a pretty nice quality film.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of when I saw those engines in the background, kind of what went through my mind was it was more showing a passage of time. Because, I mean, keep in mind, this is supposed to take place 30 years after Return of the Jedi, which took place how many years after the episode one? And so by saying this is kind of just a junkyard at this point, just kind of puts it in the same place in a later time.
So then we've got the stormtroopers, and Dan's already pointed this out, and some people have talked about the fact that we got a new stormtrooper helmet because of possibly the lawsuit regarding the old stormtrooper helmet. Which I had not thought of, but it looks like that might be, I mean, I don't know how much that plays into it, but it's certainly an interesting real world aspect to all of this, not only from the fact that, you know, Lucasfilm can actually now own the new Stormtrooper helmet and patent it and trademark and all of that other stuff and control it a little bit more, but also there's another piece that you can make money on with a new design, very much like the new X-Wings. You know, they've got toys to sell. They've got new toys to sell, right? We're not just
recycling those. Well, and that was, I mean, cynically kind of what my assumption was by going, I mean, lawsuit too, but by going, okay, here's the technology that you guys are all going to recognize and immediately get excited and go, oh, the X-Wings look so cool, but they're a little bit different, so we can sell all new toys for
it. Yep. And that
has to... an in-world explanation would also be technology changes, clothes change. Honestly, if everything was exactly the same, we'd be complaining about it.
Right.
That's true, yeah.
Look at cars now. I mean, a Mustang now is totally different from a Mustang 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is Star Wars a financial boon to the toy manufacturers? Yes. You know, but still, we would be just as upset if it was, or more upset. It's like, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, although Angie, I would venture to say that there are some Mustang enthusiasts who think that the new design is not necessarily better than the old design.
Oh, and I'm one of them. I believe me, but I'm just saying. Look at how cars change in 30 years. So,
but there are
why should we expect that spaceships don't go through the same process?
But there are going to be people who say, well, that X-wing doesn't look right, or the lightsaber doesn't look right. And, you know, there are things with that.
Yeah.
I tell you what, we are going to get into the lightsaber, and we're going to get into the other piece of technology that looks kind of the same but a little different. We're going to take a real quick break here and let you listen to some messages about our other shows, and then we will be right back here when Echo Chamber continues. Stand by.
Stabilize your rear deflectors. Watch for enemy fighters. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hi, folks. My name is Timothy Hardy, and I am one of the co-hosts of H2O, the weekly show about everything genre that I host with Mr. Jason Hunt, and we talk about pretty much anything you need to hear about or want to hear about or didn't know you needed to hear about in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, horror, science fiction, all these great things that we cover every week. And it is just a opportunity for you to tune in and listen to some really, really fun stuff. H2O, scififorme.com. We'd love to have you listen.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker here, inviting you to join me and the rest of the Sci-Fi for Me crew every week as we dive into the details of the TV shows that you and we love. Did you miss your favorite show this week? Or perhaps you need someone to talk to about that latest plot twist and the implications. Well, maybe your friends don't geek out over shows like Supernatural, Grimm, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like what your friends over at Sci-Fi for Me do, but hey, it's what we live for. So join us for the latest at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Our transmitters are made from hand-wavium. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
And we're back on the Echo Chamber. Jason Hunt here, along with Jennifer Wise, Cami Settle, Angie Sutton,
Yo.
Dan Handley, and Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And, and we are talking about, we're spending an awful lot of time talking about 88 seconds of footage, but it is a very, very fun 88 seconds, and we haven't even gotten into the best parts yet. Let's talk Sith for a minute, because I want to save the best for last. Okay, so we've got this hooded figure stumbling out into the cold, dark Stygian night. And I have seen a let's talk about the lightsaber first, because the lightsaber pops on and it's a red blade, it's a ragged blade, and then you get these two little pieces of lightsaber flame coming out of the cross piece.
Clearly it does not meet OSHA standards.
The cross guard.
And this is probably the most controversial piece out of the whole teaser, that everybody is just fixated on this lightsaber design. And Jen, let's start with you, because you've got an opinion on it, and I've got some other things that I've run across that mm-hmm. could speak to what your concerns are. So let's start there.
Well, I mean, yeah, like I said, I kind of went into, I guess it was my first legitimate nerd rage of the fall season for me. Because, you know, there was that lightsaber reveal, because you've got the hooded figure and you're like, oh, this is probably the bad guy. And you get the lightsaber, boom, instant excitement. And then the cross guard comes on and it's like, what the heck is that about? I mean, it was, I know that there were a lot of different parts that in, you know, I don't know if it was extended universe or whatnot, but there are different elements that have been lightsaber resistant mentioned before, and the Washington Post pointed this out in their article about it as well. The one that I could immediately think of was, I think it's called Cortosis.
Yes.
But there are elements already accepted in the Star Wars universe that either diffuse or completely repel lightsaber energy. So if you're looking to keep yourself safe on the handguard while you're in a duel, why not use Cortosis instead of another energy blade that you could gut yourself with?
Well, and the thing, the two things that I've seen online with regard to it is, one, it's so totally not practical, but it's J.J. Abrams, so it looks cool, and it doesn't have to make sense.
It does That's look cool. One. That's the kind of thing that I'm like, I want to buy that lightsaber model, you know?
The other
but I'll still be mad about it.
Well, it's another toy to sell, certainly. But the other thing that I've seen is that in a lot of those instances where, and we only saw this in Revenge of the Sith, mm-hmm. where the two blades slide down towards each other and they get in really close to each other, and it's not something that we saw very much, but this cross piece could be one of those things where you could just angle just enough that you could stab somebody while you're that close, which would be another possibility. But then I also read that this particular lightsaber design could be a leftover from thousands of generations ago. This could be one of these old lightsaber designs that have been around, because apparently we've seen this type of lightsaber in expanded universe, like you were talking about with you know, a couple of different Jedi using this from like 1,000 years ago. So really, really, really old style design.
So you're suggesting this might be an anachronistic Sith?
Either that, or they ran across a design and this is a cobbled together blade, because certainly the raggedness of the blade would seem to indicate either the crystal
is sort of like reverse engineering or something. Yeah, which would be really a great element to the storyline.
And it also plays to the rumor, and this is a good way to segue into this, the rumor that Gwendolyn Christie, besides playing John Boyega's Imperial officer commander, is also studying the ways of the Sith, and is either on her own trying to become a Sith warrior, or has been recruited to be an Inquisitor, because we have rumors that they're coming back. And so maybe this is a homemade lightsaber with a crystal that doesn't focus quite well because she doesn't have the skills yet to really do it right. And what's interesting,
There's also from a, say, talking about the handguard, those mini blades, from a martial arts standpoint, in a sword fight, a lot of times you'll get punching and kicking, and even with the sword hand, a punch, because that handle makes it stronger. Now, using that technique, could use those smaller blades as daggers.
Mm-hmm. Could be, yeah. Well, and this hooded figure, let's talk about that person for a second. A lot of people are thinking that it's Adam Driver.
Some people on Tumblr are saying otherwise.
I don't think it's Adam Driver. I saw a GIF. Where did I see it? It's online. I think it's on IGN. Somebody posted it in the comments. It is a side-by-side comparison with the hooded figure and a shot of Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones, and they're walking the exact same way, that tired stagger. Now, granted, it's a physicality that pretty much anybody could do at this point if you're staggering out of whatever you're doing, but it matches so well, and it really. It's like in Return of the Jedi when the bounty hunter Bush shows up with Chewbacca. And the first time you watch that film, you have no idea that that's Carrie Fisher under there.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea even that it's a female. Mm-hmm. But once you know that it's Carrie Fisher, you can never watch Return of the Jedi again and see Bush as anybody other than Princess Leia in disguise. The physical cues are there once you know what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at this hidden, you look at this hooded figure, and the arms are a little thinner. Then I don't know. There's some after seeing this GIF putting Gwendolyn Christie up against this, it makes sense that maybe that's who that is. At least in theory.
I actually hadn't seen the GIF or anything, but I can, because I did notice on, I think, my fifth viewing of the trailer that it's a slighter figure than you'd expect a male to be.
I'm going to go out on a limb here because we've seen some concept art of Boyega and Daisy Ridley's characters facing a Sith of some sort in a mask. And my thinking is that the masked figure is going to be Adam Driver's character late in the movie. And possibly he gets recruited because we've seen him in an X-Wing flight suit. So we know he starts out at least as part of the Republic in some way, shape, or form, whether he's undercover or not, to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm thinking is Gwendolyn Christie's character recruits Adam Driver's character into the ways of the Sith or the Inquisitors or whatnot, and he becomes the one in the mask. After whatever confrontation comes up with Luke Skywalker, because you know that's going to be a part of this as well. But that's a theory. That's complete speculation on my part.
That'd be a good one, though.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about it because we've hinted at other rumors and stuff on the story. I'm not going to go into the rumor about the end of the movie, because I've seen some of that, and it does involve Adam Driver's character, and it does involve Luke and Han, and I don't even want to discuss that one yet, because people would scream, no, don't! Mainly because if it turns out to be true, there's going to be a lot of fans, like, you talk about nerd rage. that's all I'm going to say about it. It would be a high impact moment, let's say.
It'd be dropping a bomb for sure.
Yeah, it definitely would. It would
kind of like, you know, destroying Vulcan.
actually, it would probably be even worse than that. I think the nerd rage, if the rumors turn out to be true about where the story is going to go and how Adam Driver becomes the villain of the piece, because we know, he, you know, from the very beginning, we know that he was going to be a villain. If the rumors are true about that, then this will change everything about all of the Star Wars movies ever to come after this one. And a lot of people will be so upset about it. It would be worse than the nerd rage when Chewbacca got killed in the books.
I threw my book when that happened, actually.
Yeah, and
I don't take disappointments well.
Well, and that's one of those things where I was talking to Robert Salvatore about it, and he said the decision had been made. Mm-hmm. And when he got the assignment, that was one of the things that was part of it. And he said, somebody's going to write it. Somebody's going to do it. He said, if I'm doing it, at least I'm going to give him a good exit. And, you know, a heroic ending and all of that, because, you know, he wasn't sure. He was like, how do you do this kind of thing? Because he knew what the reaction was going to be. But yeah, this was going to be tons worse than that if this turns out to be true. But let's get to the big part. Let's get to the best part. The Millennium Falcon.
And John
Williams, the theme shows, I mean, it just blasts you in the face. And I have to admit, got a little emotional. I'm sitting there in the theater, and I know what's coming. I know what's coming. Just because I know at some point you're going to see something with the theme. I wasn't sure visually what it was going to be. We'd seen the GIF of the Millennium Falcon coming toward the camera at some point, and that's maybe a fake. And I was like, okay, we haven't seen any good stuff yet. Show us the eye candy. And when that thing showed up, you've got this shot. It was almost like I was seven again. Because I remember sitting at North Park Mall in the theater. When I was seven, it was May of 1977, and I saw Star Wars in the theater, and it changed everything. And I know for a lot of us of that age, Star Wars was a defining moment for so many people. And I'm sitting there next to my son, he's 12, and I'm sitting there thinking, I really, 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 really want kids this age to have that moment.
Yeah.
Maybe the prequels did some of that, but it wasn't as, granted, you know, films these days, now everything's all high tech and 3D and CG and all that, but there was a ground shift. You know, the landscape of film changed completely with Star Wars, and the emotional impact of that story. You know, it is our King Arthur. It is our modern mythology, our Hercules. And I found myself wishing that the kids these days could have a moment like that.
Uh-huh.
And I really, really want this movie to be that for them.
Well, and I think that was a great reveal, especially, I mean, I as a musician had a little glee fit when I did find out that John Williams for sure was coming back to do the score. So yeah, the same thing with the expectation that you're going to get hit any minute with something, you know, some nostalgia with this, you know, that specific theme and probably some old imagery. For me, it was just like, I mean, like I said, I wasn't alive when the first ones came out, but it took me back to every New Year's Eve when we'd sit down and as a family and watch the trilogy to stay up until midnight. And all of a sudden I'm 5 years old and excited and just like squirming in my seat, like, oh my God. So I think that even just the elements like the music and stuff alone are going to create that sense of awe and that sense of wonder with really anyone who's familiar with it.
Well, and something that struck me, you talk about the music, the orchestral hits that are in this teaser, the bumps, are very evocative of Return of the Jedi when you know you're over the Sarlacc pit and they're bringing Luke Skywalker out onto the walking the plank, and you're seeing all of these, you know, every time the orchestra hits the note you're seeing something else. You know, you get the shot of Leia and you get the shot of Han, you get the shot of Lando and Luke, and that, and you know something's about to happen. just because of the buildup, the tension in that, and mm-hmm. and you get a sense of that in this as well. And now, this is an original piece that Williams did for the trailer, and so it's clear that they're trying to do everything they can to connect this to the original trilogy. It really feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So do you think that Harrison Ford is going to be the pilot for the Millennium Falcon?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's no way that you can get around that.
Yeah, I think so too.
You're talking about the music, even at the very, very beginning of the trailer, when they first reveal whether it's Tatooine or whatever, the desert scene, mm-hmm. the background music was identical to what we would have gotten on the original trilogy. And it's once I heard that, that's when I knew this was the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny too, we're sitting there in Big Hero 6 and all of these teasers, you know, we're anticipating that it's there. And this, the next trailer would come up and James would look at me and, oh, it's not the trailer. And the next trailer would come up and even something else. And the next trailer would come up. They loaded so many trailers in front of it.
Sure.
And we're like, that's not it. That's not it. When are they going to show it? That's not it. And
I will admit, this is where I maybe was a little spoiled, because for a couple of years I did work for a movie theater, and I still have a lot of friends who work for a movie theater. And we kind of went under the radar and went in when they first got the teaser to build onto Big Hero 6. There were a few of us who came in after hours and literally just watched the teaser. So I didn't have that sort of build-up anticipation of the other trailers, and I kind of wish I had now. But I got to see it a couple hours early. So.
Well, and you talk about that there when it broke online, especially when the leaks started to show up. You know, I saw a couple of places on Facebook where it was like, "Hey, it's online. It's been leaked," and I looked at it and went, "I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to watch."
A lot of those were fake ones, though. The one that I saw that a friend had posted was spliced together with, like, old footage. They mm-hmm. had some footage from that video game. I think it was called Misery. I'm not really into the video game scene because of my motion sickness. And then they had, like, photos of Harrison Ford from Ender's Game. Like,
yeah.
there were a lot of fakes. Very convincing fakes.
But even
it was better than the one I got.
But fakes.
The one
was
I got
it the
was
the Rick Roll that I saw.
Yes, I got the Rick Roll. I was a little disappointed in that one.
Well, even when it came on iTunes and it was all mm-hmm. it was there and it was official and it was ready to go, I said I told myself, I said, I'm not going to watch this online first.
Yeah,
I want to see it on the screen first. I want to get hit with everything that first time on the screen, because that's where it belongs, and that's what has been missing for 30 years. Is because good or bad, whatever the prequels have, there is something iconic about the Millennium Falcon and its connection to the original trilogy. You don't have a ship from the prequels that does the same kind of thing. There's not a visual element from the prequels that evokes an emotional reaction outside of Jar Jar Binks. And, you know,
we're not sure that's a good one or not.
It's not. Yeah. It's not. But, you know,
well, okay. Let's not forget Ewan McGregor's beard. That was, like, generation-defining for me.
Well, in all fairness, the prequel trilogy did give us Darth Maul for the, 10 minutes he's on screen?
And again, very, very evocative music in the prequel trilogy. I think that if the music had been, I'm sorry, I think if the story had been given the same care that the music had been given in the prequels, we wouldn't even be going into these new sequels with an air of disappointment.
I think the music of the prequels was probably the best thing out of the whole thing. And
yes.
it really even elevated this what little story there was into something that was at least watchable. Now, and you're right. If they had taken the time to craft the script in a way that John Williams had done with the music, then it would have been tons better. But instead, we got this big CG fest that didn't really have a whole lot of story. But to see the Millennium Falcon on the big screen again.
This was a trailer that was made to be viewed in a theater, not to be viewed on a smartphone or on a laptop. This was made to be viewed in a theater, and I think it was a complete home run. And I'm
I think
psyched.
So. The only thing that I don't want to say it bothers me because it sounds like I'm nitpicking, but I am. the shot of the Millennium Falcon is not like Tim was talking about earlier. The visual palette of the original trilogy is very distinct. Is very 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 recognizable, and this. Lately, especially in genre films, like, and I think maybe it came back, it went back, started with Battlestar Galactica, the reboot. This sense of the camera being right there in the middle, and you've got the zip zooms and the verite feel about, you know, the cameraman is right in the middle of the action, just trying to catch something. That's that frenetic feeling. When the Falcon goes up into the air and swings around and dives back in on top of the desert, I thought, oh, this feels like Battlestar Galactica. Just for it was just this real fleeting, quick flash of thought.
Well, and that's where something you're going to have to consider is J.J. Abrams' style. Yeah. There's three things that he's got. He's got shaky camera, he's got lens flare, and then he's got the swoop, you know? And like I said, I support J.J. Abrams largely. I do enjoy his style, but he kind of does fall back on, I guess he's a three-trick pony.
It's not just J.J. Abrams either. You've got the modern, you've got basically what was the visual style back then,
right?
And the visual style that's now.
Yeah.
And they've got to try and incorporate what's current for the current audiences in with what we expect from the original.
Well, I get
there's also that. Whether they want to do that Dramamine cam or not is what I call it. It's all in the editing because you know you can lose yourself. You can't keep track of a scene from start to finish if they don't edit it well.
Yeah.
And that's the part that really bugs me is that they don't pay attention to that continuity throughout the scene.
Well, and the other thing too is that nowadays half the time you've got to consider what it's going to look like when they do the 3D conversion. Mm-hmm. Or what is it going to look like when you shoot it with an IMAX camera? Because we've got IMAX stuff that's been shot for this film, which is the first time that something like that's happened. But I tell you, when the Millennium Falcon, when they level off and those TIE fighters come in, it's like, it is. It's like going back 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the shot.
Well, here's the thing to consider that I think that is really, really important and gives me a lot of hope for it. The problem, at the end of the day, the biggest problem with the prequel trilogy is that it was a story that nobody needed to be told.
Yes, exactly.
We all knew, we knew everything we needed to know. We were told it in the first three films. We knew everything we needed to know about how we had got there. The thing about doing sequels, the thing about opening up the universe and going forward is that it's all new.
Right.
It's completely open. We can go anywhere we want. They can tell any story they want in that universe. And that is the best thing about that trailer is that for the first time in a really long time, we actually have a sense of going forward. We're telling new stories. We're going places we haven't been before, and all bets are off. It's wide open. We can go anywhere, and that is so much. That is very much that feeling I got when I was a kid, not knowing what I'm about to see, waiting for the story to be told, having it unfold in front of me, and not sitting there and going, "I know how this ends."
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Well, not only that, but this teaser doesn't give away anything. It just
No, it doesn't give away anything.
I mean, granted, teaser.
It does have an interesting little thing that has been pointed out elsewhere as well, that none of the shots took place in space. They were all on some sort of terrestrial atmosphere.
That's a good point.
They were all on planets, not in space, which is kind of a departure from the original, even the trailers for the original films.
Well, and I'm going to say, speaking of being in space, one thing that I expect, and as a fan of the original trilogy, and this is one thing that Timothy Zahn got right. This movie needs to start with a Star Destroyer. Whether it's an active in use one, or if it belongs to the Republic, or if it's a dead Hulk, it's if it doesn't start with the Star Destroyer, then JJ got it wrong. And he doesn't understand. Yeah. Because every Star Wars film, and I don't consider the prequels part of that, but the original trilogy, every single one of them started with a Star Destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you talk about the visual sense and the visual aesthetic, that's part of it. And, you know, it is funny because James and I would talk about it, and we keep going back to the fact that we're not going to get the 20th Century Fox fanfare in front of this.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that that has become, and even on the big soundtrack releases that they did a few years ago, the Fox fanfare is on the soundtrack. It's part of it the has, Star it Wars has soundtrack. Its
own, yeah, which I thought was fantastic, because there is a part of me that has to be there for the music. But...
And I've got to wonder what Disney is going to do. You know, maybe they'll put the castle on Coruscant. But, you know, we'll have, but the music won't be there. The fanfare won't be there. And that, and it just, there's just going to be something missing from the beginning of a Star Wars film without that element.
Okay, we'll see the Cinderella castle, but they'll license out the music.
I was going to say, and it's John Williams. I'm sure he can do some sort of pastiche of that fanfare too.
Well, and I'm hoping they do something where they at least... Yeah, it would be great if Disney could license the fanfare. That would be great. I know they're not going to do that because, you know, 20th Century Fox is still around and they're a competitor.
Yeah.
But they've got to do something. That's the thing that sets the tone for the whole rest of it for us original fans. You know, the fact that you have that fanfare, because, you know, Star Wars brought that back. You know, up until that point, you know, the 20th Century Fox hadn't been using that fanfare for a long time. So, you know, when that comes back, and then it's now part of the collective memory of Star Wars fans, that you hear that 20th Century Fox fanfare, even on other movies, it evokes that feeling of, oh, this is gonna be a Star Wars film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what though. If we don't hear that music, and then we hear the swell of the Star Wars theme, and we see that Star Destroyer cut across the sky, the last thing in the world you're going to be thinking about is, I miss the 20th century. You're just not. You're going to be sitting there going, oh my God. So, you know, would it be great? Sure, it would be great. It'd be lovely, you know, that. But that's not going to be what I'm thinking about right then.
I just had a crazy thought. Tell me how crazy this is. It's crazy. We've heard rumors, because the big thing that everybody had been talking about when Disney bought Lucasfilm, everybody was like, oh, maybe we'll get the original trilogy on Blu-ray, the finished and restored and all of that. And then, of course, the question of rights come in, because 20th Century Fox has the distribution rights to those films in perpetuity. And people were wondering, well, what if Disney buys them out? What if Disney makes some sort of a deal that would allow them to release the original trilogy fully restored on Blu-ray? Because a lot of the material has already been done. It's just the stuff that wasn't, you know, the stuff that was cut out for the special edition, that's all that's left. What if Disney makes a deal for the original trilogy on Blu-ray and the Fox fanfare at the same time? What if that's part of the deal?
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
We will. We will find out.
I was going to say, that would probably involve some sort of deal with the devil, but one can hope.
That would be something. All right, so anything else in the teaser that just really sticks out and says... good or bad, this is going to be a disaster, or this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread?
Well, just one thing that I noticed was with that astromech droid, it's the R2 head with the ball. Everything in here almost seems to be major points to the thing. That's just the one little deal that almost seems like a one-off, unless there's something about that droid that's going to make a huge impact on the movie as a whole.
I hear that it belongs to Daisy's character. for whatever that means, that, you know, since she's working in the junkyard and she's supposedly one of the lead characters, maybe she and this droid have the same kind of relationship that Luke and R2 have. Maybe this.
What if it is R2's head?
It doesn't look like it. And we, no. We've heard.
Plus, isn't R2 supposed to be in it?
Well, we've seen photos of R2-D2 on set. So R2 and 3PO are both in this because they have to be, because they're in every single
one. I knew Kenny Baker was there.
Yeah. Yeah. Kenny Baker's in it and Anthony Daniels. And I hope they're getting along.
For a change.
It would be nice to know that everybody is back and everybody's doing all right. Now, one thing that everybody has pointed out is the fact that this movie doesn't, this teaser does not show any of the original cast.
I actually prefer it that way. I don't think that the teaser, because the teaser is a big deal, we all knew it was coming. We've looked forward to it for so long. I think it would have cheapened the teaser a little bit to go, oh, and by the way, just a reminder, look at all these other people, you know. Yeah. We know that we're going to be able to see the original cast, and, you know, to some extent. I think it was a good move on their part to not put them in the initial 88-second teaser.
Well, and I think too, because
it was just unnecessary.
Well, yeah. Besides that, I think that if at whatever point we first see official images of the original cast, you know the internet is going to blow up over Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Good or bad. And you know, granted she's lost weight, but, you know, as rough as her life has been, you know, the obvious trolling will happen. And I think they're probably going to hold off on the original cast for as long as they can.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. That's okay. That gives me more time to imagine that Mark Hamill is showing up to set every day dressed as the, you know, Batman the Animated Series Joker. That's, you know, as much as I grew up on Star Wars, that's the Mark Hamill that I want to believe exists in the real world.
Well, and we saw
the one that kills people. Great.
yeah, with style.
Well, and it's funny because you mentioned that generational thing when, you know, we've talked about it before, the fact that Mark Hamill now is the same age that Alec Guinness was when he did the first Star Wars movie. And yeah. it's just mind-blowing for us that we're sitting there going, no, you can't be that old. We can't be that old. And yet we are.
I'm not that old, so.
He is now Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He is.
No, it makes it perfect, though. It's like it's come full circle.
It has. Mm-hmm. And we probably have come full circle as well, because we've gotten to the end of the teaser, into the trailer. And of course, we've gone longer than we expected to. But, you know, that's how these things go, isn't it? I'm wondering when we're going to get our next trailer. We've got a year to go. Maybe we'll probably get something. I'm probably not going to be attached to The Hobbit now, since we've gotten this one and it's so close. We'll probably, I don't know, what do you think? January? April?
I'm thinking January, February would be the first one.
Unless they have a strategic plan to do just a little at a time, a little at a time, a little at a time to try and build it up a little bit more.
Yeah, maybe.
They might have one waiting in the wings to come in earlier.
I'm wondering if they're going to do it the Marvel way. Well, they'll say, "Hey, we've got this thing, and we're going to premiere it." Oops, it leaked online. Well, we'll give you something else.
That's always my preference.
And blame. Well, they don't have anybody to blame it on. I mean, Marvel just said it was Hydra.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true.
Well, they got the Sith.
Well, they can
blame it on the Sith.
The Sith doesn't want you knowing their plans.
That's true. All right, so our plans are to maybe revisit this a little bit more, and we'll do some more echo chambers here coming up throughout the upcoming year. In the meantime, if you want to give us your reaction to the teaser, you can share your thoughts either on our main site, scififormeme.com, or you can join us over on the social media. We are on pretty much everything: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+. Or you can send us an email, echochamber@scififormeme.com. And you can subscribe to our various podcasts over on iTunes. We're also on Double Twist, OneCast, Stitcher. And you can call our hotline if you want to call and leave us a message there. It's area code 573-42-SCIFI. And that's going to do it for us here in the Echo Chamber today. I want to thank everybody on the panel. Cammy Settle.
G'day.
Jen Wise.
Have a good one.
Angie Sutton.
Evelyn.
Timothy Harvey.
Thank you, folks.
And Dan Henley. And we will be back for another edition of Echo Chamber soon. In the meantime, may the Force be with you.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2014 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. And may the Force be with you.